The name's Bond. James Bond. I would like a vodka martini, shaken, not stirred. A book fell on my head. I blame myself. Okay, now I'm just being ridiculous. Alright, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Major Tom's Movie Podcast. Today is Saturday, October 9th, 2021. And this is the opening weekend for the new James Bond movie, No Time to Die, starring the one and only Daniel Craig in his fifth and final outing as James Bond. And while I did go see the movie today, for this podcast, I'm actually not going to do a review. I'm going to save that for my blog, where I can actually articulate my words a little bit better. But what I will say is, for a final outing and a send-off for Daniel Craig's interpretation of James Bond, No Time to Die is actually really, really good. But I would actually really like to start this off by saying how much I really enjoyed Daniel Craig's turn as James Bond. He first showed up as James Bond in Casino Royale, which was released back in 2006, which was 15 years ago. So it's kind of amazing to see that you got one actor who's played the same character for 15 years, even though he's only had five movies. But Daniel Craig's performance as James Bond has been nothing less than spectacular. And Casino Royale was, as far as I'm concerned, one of the best Bond movies ever made. Some of the sequels, some of the follow-ups, a bit hit and miss, but then you could say that about every other James Bond movie that's been made over the past 60 years. But with Daniel Craig's, it's gotten to be more realistic, a little bit more gritty. He made the character a bit more human. He makes mistakes. He obviously disobeys orders, And he gets the crap beat out of him a lot. He gets shot up, thrown around. This is the kind of James Bond where people would really say, you know what, he's going through hell. I don't want to be this James Bond because it looks like it hurts. And no thank you, just give me the vodka martinis, give me the girls, Let's do that instead of this. But I really appreciate these newer James Bond movies because they give more depth to the character, who has always been portrayed as this kind of misogynistic dinosaur. And as a matter of fact, some of the James Bond movies over the past 30 years have actually gone and pointed this out, especially in GoldenEye, in which the character M, which was then played by Judi Dench, she actually calls James Bond a misogynist, sexist dinosaur, a relic of the Cold Era, which isn't actually too far from the truth for the actual character. The character was created by Ian Fleming back in 1953, so yeah, he literally is a relic of the Cold War. The entire mentality, the anti-Russian thing, that's kind of who the character was. And for 40 years, a lot of the actors kind of try to play him in some way the same way, but with Daniel Craig's new movies, those old movies, which probably seem cheesy to a lot of people now, it really wouldn't fly or be taken anywhere as seriously. Well, that's not to say that those old movies don't hold up very well. Some of them really do. GoldenEye is absolutely one of my favorite James Bond movies. And going all the way back to Sean Connery's movies, Dr. No, the original film. Then you had Goldfinger, which is outstanding. And then it moved to George Lazenby with Honor, Majesty's Secret Service, which, as far as I'm concerned, is one of the best Bond movies ever made. It's even though he only played the character once. Then Roger Moore took off with his more slapstick kind of James Bond, which was more lighthearted than anything else. I forget which movie, but he's literally swinging on a vine and you hear Tarzan. That's just how ridiculous it was. Unfortunately, Roger Moore also has the only movie in the James Bond franchise that I really fucking hate, which was Moonraker. It was just an incredibly cheesy, poorly written Star Trek knockoff or ripoff or whatever you want to call it. It was just bad. all around. And then after Roger Moore's stint as James Bond, you got Timothy Dalton as a much darker and grittier version of James Bond with his two movies, Living Daylights and License to Kill, with License to Kill actually being the best of the two, in my opinion. But after that, Pierce Brosnan would take the role in 1995's GoldenEye, which, as I said earlier, is absolutely one of my favorite Bond movies. And I think it's absolutely one of the best Bond movies ever made. Even though by today's standards it seems kind of cheesy, but it's still a lot of fun. In fact, most of these James Bond movies are a lot of fun, except for Moonraker. And yeah, I'm not going to stop harping on Moonraker because that's an awful fucking movie. But Daniel Craig's movies have a unique quality in that all these movies are connected in some fashion. In fact, Quantum of Solace is quite literally the direct sequel to Casino Royale. And after that, again, there's a thread that ties in with, you know, Skyfall, Spectre, and ultimately culminating in No Time to Die. Now, when Daniel Craig was cast as James Bond for Casino Royale, there was a lot of backlash about James Bond being a blonde, blue-eyed character. But the truth be told, it didn't really matter who would take the role. Somebody's always going to complain about this new Bond. Oh, it's not my James Bond. My James Bond would never be like this. I'm like, well, you're right. It's not going to be your James Bond. It's technically never been yours. It's been Ian Fleming's. I'll be getting back to Daniel Craig's movies here. As I said before, Casino Royale is actually one of my favorite movies of all time. And it's certainly one of the best Bond movies ever made, as I said earlier. But following that up with Quantum of Solace, the problem I have with Quantum of Solace is that it's not that it's a sequel. It's the fact that it was poorly edited. I mean, the editing is so hyper-fast, you really aren't given a whole lot of time to figure out what's going on before it moves on to the next thing. It's just like, there seems to be a cut every 2 or 3 seconds. It's like, the human brain really can't keep up with that. Not very well, anyway. And on top of that, the writing for the movie was actually god-awful. But that, I can't really blame the movie for that. You know, that was the result of a writer's strike. So Daniel Craig himself had to come in and help finish writing some of the stuff, you know, some of his lines. But you could definitely tell that Quantum of Solace was not the movie that the filmmakers were intending it to be. And Daniel Craig has said this movie has issues. And honestly, I'm amazed it turned out as well as it did. The funny thing is that Quantum of Solace is actually the first James Bond movie I actually ever saw in theaters, which, even as disjointed and as problematic as it was a hell of an experience. You know, there's nothing like seeing James Bond on the big screen. It's kind of like Star Wars, you know, it's an event movie whenever one of these gets released. But James Bond has been going for over 50 years, so, you know, there's always a reason to be excited for a new James Bond picture. After Quantum of Solace, we got Skyfall, which delves a little bit more into the character's backstory about where he comes from, because the name Skyfall actually refers to the homestead that he comes from in Scotland. So that was actually a really interesting idea, and it sets up for one of the best final battles of that movie. Now, for James Bond fans, you know, you would think that there would be a lot of gadgets and a lot of stuff. There really weren't in Casino Royale and Quantum of Solace. But you did see a car with Stinger missiles in Skyfall, which was actually pretty cool. But, yeah, Casino Royale kind of turned the whole James Bond mythos on its head by focusing more on the man than the gadgets and all the cars and the women and stuff, even though that is part and parcel for the character. always has been. But I'm getting a little ahead of myself here. After Skyfall, you have Spectre, which really gets into the main villainous organization which was behind everything in the last three movies. And when you think of Spectre, the main villain you really would hope would show up would be Ernst Stavro Blofeld. And this is one of the issues I had with Spectre's marketing, is that, you know, early on people were saying, Christoph Waltz's character is not Blofeld, even though he clearly is, and it shows up as he takes the name Ernst Stavro Blofeld in the movie. It's just like, really? That is one of the worst kept fucking secrets since Star Trek Into Darkness, where the main villain was not supposed to be called Khan, but he ended up being Khan Noonien Singh anyway. It's bad marketing. That being said, I actually had a really good time with Spectre. It was a lot of fun. There's a lot of great action sequences that you can actually see because better editing, better direction. I mean, the opening Day of the Dead sequence in Mexico is one of the best openings I've ever seen in a Bond movie. It's just outstanding. Now, also, a fun fact, and you can see this on YouTube, Spectre also holds the Guinness World Record for largest explosion in a movie, largest practical explosion. And that's what happens when Bond blows up Blofeld's base. It's one of the most spectacular explosions I've ever seen in a movie. Oddly enough, Spectre isn't the first movie in Daniel Craig's lineup to have a world record. There's a sequence in Casino Royale in which James Bond flips a car to avoid hitting his love interest, and the car flips like 7 or 8 times, and that was actually a world record at the time for the number of rollover spins in a stunt, which is actually, it was a really spectacular stunt, which is also what these movies are really known for. So, and all that brings us to No Time to Die, which is the 25th and final James Bond movie in Daniel Craig's lineup. And I have to say that it's a hell of a way to go out. And I think for most forgiving James Bond fans, they're actually going to be pretty satisfied with this. But I can definitely see why some people wouldn't like it. And Daniel Craig's movies have always been fairly divisive. No Time to Die is really no different in that regard. But, you know, some people are going to complain about the villains not being that great, and on that point they would be right. The villains in this movie are pretty milquetoast. They're pretty average when you compare it to, say, Le Chief from the first movie, who was more than a match intellectually for James Bond. I mean, going back to Casino Royale, one of the most intense sequences of that movie was not the action sequences, it was the actual card game being played when you saw James Bond and Le Chiffre face off. I mean, Mads Mikkelsen was an outstanding villain in that movie. And you could definitely tell that at some point Le Chiffre definitely had the upper hand, while James Bond thought that Le Chiffre was bluffing even if he wasn't. The tension between those two characters was really, really intense. And Le Chiffre, as a villain, actually comes across as more human because he had as much to lose from losing the game as James Bond did, because Le Chiffre's employers were going to be out to kill him for losing their money. So, yeah. Now, I'm not going to say that No Time to Die is perfect. It really isn't. For a James Bond movie, it runs really long. It's almost 3 hours in length. I think they could have cut out maybe 10, 15 minutes, and they wouldn't have lost anything. But the other problem is that the motivation for the villain, Lucifer Safin, I think his name was, is completely muddled. There's no real motivation as for him doing what he's doing or why he's doing it. But, I mean, I have to give credit to Rami Malek for playing the character as well as he did, even if the character wasn't written particularly well. And Christoph Waltz's Blofeld shows up in a fairly interesting scene, but he's basically nothing more than a glorified cameo. But the way the movie concludes, I won't spoil it, but it was satisfying for me. And although I will admit, for other James Bond fans, it's not going to be that satisfying. In fact, some people are actually going to flat out hate what happens to James Bond here. And, you know, it's understandable. You know, people have a sense of ownership with this character and with this franchise. And, you know, it's, again, it's very understandable. You know, you spend 15 years with this character. You understand his motivations, why he does what he does. You can relate to Mr. Bond because he actually comes across as a genuine human being, despite being a man of privilege, a white man of privilege. While I'm going to give my full thoughts on the movie in my post on my blog about the movie, I would actually say if you're a huge fan of James Bond, specifically Daniel Craig's version of the character, you definitely gotta go out and see this, especially if you love the last four movies, the way I did. Again, they're not perfect. Casino Royale, maybe. But that's going to do it for me tonight on this episode of the podcast. So stay safe and have a good night. This is Major Tom signing off.